Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Later in the program, we're going to talk about a program in Vermont that screens Burlington's wastewater for potential COVID-19 outbreaks. And we'll look at some of the challenges facing Vermonters without stable housing this winter and how one organization is trying to meet the need. But first, we're going to talk about sexual misconduct, gender imbalance, and what some women over the years have said is a culture of sexism in the Vermont National Guard. These are issues facing all branches of the military throughout our country. Here in Vermont, Adjutant General Greg Knight, who has held that position for almost a year now, has pledged to address concerns about sexual assault and misogyny. But our guest today says the Guard may need to take a different approach, one that includes more outside oversight. Doris Sumner is the former Equal Employment and Diversity Manager for the Vermont National Guard, and she joins us now. Doris, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to talk with you. And before we get deep into our conversation with you, I just want to direct listeners to the really in-depth reporting on the Vermont Guard that Jasper Craven has been doing for several years now. We have links to his reporting with VT Digger and more recently 7 Days up on our website at vpr.org. And his most recent story includes a lot of information about how the Guard says it's going to address issues of sexism and sexual misconduct, and it highlights an audit the Guard is doing right now with a military investigator outside of the Vermont Guard. But Doris, can you tell us a little bit about your career with the Vermont Guard and your longstanding former role as the Employment and Diversity Manager?
Sure. Thank you so much again for inviting me to the conversation. And there's so much that Vermonters are thinking about. There's a lot of great topics. But this one's important because it's been ongoing. It's not one that doesn't go away. And sadly, the military has this long history of a high prevalence of sexual harassment and sexual assault. But I joined the military when I was 18, and I really did not think that I was in a sexist organization until I was in my 40s, until I got the job as an equal employment manager, and I started handling sexual harassment cases. And
Doris, before that, it wasn't something that you noticed in your own personal experience with the military?
Yeah, I joined when I was 18. I was a truck driver. I was sexually assaulted by my first commander in 1981, but I didn't consider it a sexual assault. I considered it bad choices, you know. And certainly there was sexual harassment, disparate treatment, but I really wasn't identifying it as I'm having a bad time. I identified it, this is the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so you manage the culture that you're in, and you look for ways to be successful. And I joined the Guard, and I was a personnelist. In the active duty, I was a truck driver. But when I got to the Guard, the recruiter said, well, you don't want to be a truck driver. We'll put you in the personal service company. And it worked out that I ended up getting a full-time job and being very involved in human resources. And it wasn't, again, until I was 42 that I took on the role as the equal opportunity manager and started processing cases, and 99% of the cases that I processed in the Vermont Guard were sexual harassment, and they were based on this gender discrimination. And it was then that I started recognizing the disparate treatment of women and this sometimes unconscious or conscious bias against feminine, and masculine being rewarded and femininity being seen as weak. And so women joining the military know that it's male majority, so they almost take on, I'm going to have to assimilate if I want to be successful. I'm going to have to assimilate to the male-dominated culture because the majority culture owns the culture. And again, I did not recognize this until I was actually processing cases, and that was part of my job, to help the commander prevent discrimination cases. I had a military lawyer say to me once, Doris, there's always going to be sexual assaults, there's always going to be sexual harassment, so focus on processing the cases. But I didn't agree with that, because I was like, why are these military warriors who are raising their right hand saying they would die for you know, die for our country, die for freedom, sexually assaulting other warriors who say that they would die. And so that's when we started looking at the gender imbalance and how that is connected to sex-based offenses.
Doris, and what's your answer now? Not that you have it solved or answered, but what is the answer to that fundamental question that you were asking then and continue to ask about why some warriors would assault other warriors who are on their team? You know, is it a problem with our society at large that is amplified in military culture? Is it something else? I mean, what is the answer to that question?
Yeah. Well, it is difficult not to offend the military when we criticize the military. But and using the words male-dominated or hyper-masculine or male-majority is not a put-down, but it's actually a cultural fact. The 85% of the military continues to be majority male. And there is a history of men using their power, because we know sexual assault and sexual harassment is about power, but using their power to offend. And it's not that men don't get sexually assaulted or sexually harassed, but the historic nature is those in power misusing their power. And so and that's why I'm writing a book about it and doing the work that I'm doing, because I feel like the way to combat sexism, the way to mitigate sex-based offenses, is to equalize the power, to have men and women. There is no reason today that our military should be male majority, because we know that women can do what men can do, and that masculine is not necessarily superior to feminine. And so that was my work, was the gender report, and the bill that we tried to get passed, the H-401, was we work on what we measure, and we need to measure how are we recruiting, promoting, retaining, and embracing feminine. How are we having more women as part of the warrior mix and using their characteristics and their strengths as part of our national defense? And it's just been a long entrenched history of masculine traits being rewarded and feminine traits seen as weak. And so in that sort of environment, there is a more prevalence for sex-based offenses, from remarks to ignoring a woman's ideas to actually those crude and criminal offenses of sexual assault and touching inappropriately. And so that whole spectrum of harm, it disenfranchises women. They don't want to be in that environment, and there's frankly a lot of men who don't want to be in that environment. So we continue to the military is still going to get funded, because we need the military. We honor the military. But the military, the recruiting and retention is always hurting, because, like I said, it's not that people are less patriotic. It's not that people can't do the job, but they don't want to be in a sexist culture. And a lot of times we just kind of give way. Well, it's the military, so it's okay to say that, or we just let it pass by, not really recognizing the damage that it's doing to inclusivity.
I want to talk more about that, but Doris, first of all, maybe you could explain to us in how you see it and how you've seen it in your former role as the Employment and Diversity Manager, how pervasive you think a culture of sexism and of sexual assault is in the Vermont Guard in particular.
Well, I think it's very underestimated, the everyday sexism. It's pervasive in our society, in the words that we use and the media that we're exposed to. But in the military, it's not like everyone's having a really bad time. Because, like I said, I was in my 40s, and I really did not ever feel like I'm not being successful or I don't belong. I was really just kind of enjoying all the good that the military is, because there's a lot of good that outweigh the sexism. But the sexism, when you start getting into competitive mode, when you're trying to make command, when you're trying to lead a command, when you're trying to make the next rank, and you're competing in that way, that's when it really begins to be daunting. And so, again, a lot more women choose to get out at that point because they don't see a path forward. They don't see that they're ever going to make the rank or achieve what the men might achieve. It's pervasive, but a lot of it's unconscious. We don't even recognize it.
Well, and in fact, you know, you pointed out you didn't recognize it. It's not necessarily that men in the Guard aren't recognizing it. Sometimes women aren't recognizing it. It's not always seen, as you point out, in that sort of overarching cultural way versus what an individual might be experiencing themselves.
Right. A lot of commanders like to think of their unit as very cohesive and a lot of synergy, and especially because we get the job done despite all the challenges. But what's going on, especially for women, but men too, is they're managing sexism. They're managing the cultural barriers because that's what you do when you're a warrior. You roll up your sleeves and you get it done. And so we take pride in that, but at the same time, there's a lot of damage being done because we know that sex-based harm lasts forever. People put it in their backpack. I mean, again, my offense happened when I was 18, so it was 40 years ago. So it sits with you, and you learn to live with it. And mine was, I don't want to say less harmful, but it wasn't tragic. It was consensual, but it was my commander who was taking advantage of me. But for other victims of sexual assault and sexual trauma, they didn't want it. They didn't make a bad choice. They were attacked. They were hurt. They were harmed, and they had no choice but to put it in their backpack and carry on. Because again, there's a lot of patriotism. There's a lot of love for the service, and it's very hard to come out and speak about, you know, to tarnish your time in service. You know, it's very hard to talk about something that you love so much that also hurt you so much.
So we're talking right now with Doris Sumner. Doris is the former Equal Employment and Diversity Manager for the Vermont National Guard, and she's continued to advocate, even after leaving that position, for a change in the Guard and other things that the Vermont Guard could be doing to recruit more women, to change the culture, and to make it one of fairness and balance. And as we just heard from her, one that really sort of embraces the feminine in warrior culture. And I'm going to ask her what that does. How is that a good thing and why? But also, Doris, you supported a bill in the Vermont legislature that would have created a chief diversity officer for the Guard who reported to the governor, not to the adjutant general. Adjutant General Knight and some others have said that that's kind of a duplicative position because of the job that already exists that you held, the Employment and Diversity Manager. Why do you disagree?
Well, I mean, I respect General Knight. I respect the Guard. I respect all of the staff that he's put into place and all of those policies and those strategies. But those strategies just maintain the culture. They don't really change the culture. I was there 13 years. I was in the fight. I was passionate. I was good. I got a Legion of Merit. I got all kinds of award for my work in gender equality and trying to make that connection between reducing sex-based offenses and having gender equality throughout the ranks and throughout the command. But it didn't change the culture. Holding somebody accountable for sexual assault does not change the culture. And anyone has to just Google the chief of staff of the Army in 2019 speaking to Senator Gillibrand. That video will show you that that's not changing the culture. So changing the culture is changing those who are in power, those who represent power and command climate. And we need to be more aggressive. You know, we don't like to use the term affirmative action, but we really need to embrace feminine qualities and start looking for that gender bias in our decision-making, in our performance rating, in our position assignment, and really embracing femininity if we're going to pull in diversity at the top, where that's who sets the tone. A lot of times in my training, I talk about who sets the tone or the culture in your home. It's the parents who decide what sort of home they're going to have, if people are going to wear their shoes in the house or what kind of music is going to be played or if they're swearing. Those in power set the tone. And so we need diversity in the power core, and we need to be more bold about how we're going to get there instead of just saying, well, eventually we'll have women as command sergeant majors. Eventually we'll have women as O6 commanders. One at a time in those positions does not change a culture. So that's why I say if we diversify the leadership, we change the culture.
So one of the efforts the Guard says it's making is it is having this independent audit. It's conducted through the military, but it's from an auditor who is coming from outside of the Vermont Guard to investigate what's happening in the Guard and what the culture is and where there is sexual impropriety and sexual assaults. And the Guard is also expected to hire a provost marshal any time now, as I understand it, and that's a military police official who will have investigatory duties and powers. Combining that provost marshal with the role that you used to hold as the employment and diversity manager seems like maybe it might be a good combination. Do you think that's enough?
Well, again, I think that all of these efforts are needed. I think they're effective. But I do believe that having oversight from the governor's office is not duplicative because the Guard has always done their own report card and report to the legislator. This is what we're doing. And so even though we have this outside, investigative, what do you call it, investigation, and they're going to write up a summary.
Yeah, the audit.
Yeah, the audit. 70% of people trust the military more than any other institution. We give them unwavering latitude on their behavior. So again, the report might say all these awful things, but then the two-star general can say, well, these are what I'm going to do to fix it. And then we leave it to the two-star, the commanding general, to conduct those things. And then they come back the next year and provide the report card. But I was part of providing the report card. Every year we'd go to the legislators and give the report card on the number of sexual harassments and sexual assaults. But we are taught to show the best, show the good things that we're doing. It again, it's really hard to go in front of legislators and say, here's what we're doing wrong. Here's where we're making mistakes. And so having somebody from the governor's office reading the climate assessments and having that avenue to when a service member is feels like they're being sexually harassed, they don't want to file a complaint. But who do they tell that really cares? That really cares, because if we tell our first sergeant or we tell somebody in the chain of command, oftentimes we're retaliated against. But having an outside avenue, when you write it in a climate assessment, knowing that somebody from the governor's office is actually going to read it and write the narrative and provide it to the governor, who answers to the citizens of the state of Vermont, there's going to be more pressure on the two-star, whoever it is, to change the culture. But having the two-star write his own narrative and report to the legislator, to me, has not worked. And that is the bold change that we need.
Well, we did actually ask Adjutant General Greg Knight to join the show today, and it didn't fit with his schedule. But he did send us an audio statement about the audit and how he plans to address sexual misconduct in the Vermont Guard. And we do hope to be able to interview him in person soon. But let me play you just a little bit of what Adjutant General Knight wanted to say about the audit the Guard is undergoing to assess its culture.
So I looked at it, and I volunteered and decided to invite National Guard Bureau out to conduct the assessment. For me, it's an ideal approach. It gets us an unbiased, objective, and in-depth review of our climate and our culture as an organization. What's important for me is the assessment produces findings and recommendations, and that guides us on the best courses of action to make organizational improvements. It's kind of our handrail to becoming better. And part of this is understanding we need to acknowledge whatever challenges or shortcomings come out in this assessment, and we're going to address them as swiftly as possible, and we're going to make our Guard the best and most inclusive environment that it can be.
Also, as part of his statement to us, General Knight outlined how he plans to address sexual harassment and assault in the Guard.
We have to continuously work in promoting and emphasizing an inclusive environment. And part of that, as I mentioned up front, is focusing on the prevention of sexual harassment and sexual assault. Now, another thing that's important is exemplifying that message throughout the Guard and doing that in a collaborative, cooperative and positive manner, and I'm doing that. I'm excited to see an increase in women representation among both senior leaders and in junior ranks, and the impact that it's having, and probably more importantly is the impact it's going to have in building opportunity for the future. And COVID, as hard as it is on everybody, has actually had some benefits for me because I'm not traveling as much as this job would dictate. And that gives me an opportunity to spend time with soldiers and airmen at every level. And I've been actively listening to their concerns and their ideas. For me, good ideas don't have a rank, and it's important to hear from our members. We're going to take these ideas, we're going to build on them, as well as the recommendations that we got from our women's workshop last year, in addition to what we get with the organizational assessment. So we're going to continue putting all that together. I'm going to continue meeting with our Guard members and working to foster a command climate that's safe and inclusive for everyone. It's pretty straightforward. I'm well aware of my responsibilities and all the challenges that remain, but I'm honored to have the opportunity to serve this outstanding organization, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to at least provide you a statement today, and we'll talk again in the future.
That is a statement from Adjutant General Greg Knight, and we have his full statement audio available on our webpage at vpr.org. We're talking with Doris Sumner today, former Equal Employment and Diversity Manager for the Vermont Guard. And, you know, we've talked a lot, Doris, about some of the issues and how pervasive this issue of sexism and sometimes sexual assault is in the Vermont Guard and in the military in general. But before I let you go, you know, I'd love your thoughts on this sort of chicken and egg dilemma. You know, you've said one of the important pieces is to have more women throughout the military, but also especially in leadership. But, you know, according to Jasper Craven's reporting from last week, just 15% of the more than 3,000 member force today is female. And how do you recruit more women before changing the culture, while also noting that to change the culture, you need more women? You know, how do you do one or the other or both at the same time when they seem to both rely on the other one being done first?
Yeah, that is the great question. How are we going to get more women into a sexist culture when they don't want to be in a sexist culture? And that's why it's important for the current leadership, those who have the privilege of power right now, to really make it a priority. And I have no doubt in General Knight's authenticity of everything that he is doing to try to bring that in. But again, I think it's very that they underestimate the sexism that's throughout. A lot of it's unconscious. But so really making it a priority for people to participate in that sort of those conversations about bias, about gender expectations, about stereotypes, and how there's disparate treatment among men and women without people getting offended or on the defensive, but really looking for ways to be more inclusive leaders so we retain the women that we have right now, and they're going to recruit their sisters, and the men in the ranks are going to recruit their daughters. There are so many right now that would say, I would not recruit my daughter, and we need to create a culture where, well, this is really working. There is an inclusiveness. We understand the difference between of how gender bias plays out in our conversations, in our assignments, in our performance appraisals. So the structure of the military is awesome. The structure, the policies, the hierarchy is awesome if everyone is an inclusive leader, if everyone's aware of their bias and does that pause and really considers, you know, am I selecting this person based on their real talent, or am I selecting because he's my buddy, he's my bro, I know him, we went to war together.
Doris, what about that? I mean, if convince the people who say, look, if you can't hack it, if you don't like the culture, don't join, or, you know, that may be a perception that at least publicly is falling by the wayside. But what is the benefit to all Americans and to the military of valuing the feminine in warrior culture and adding more women to the ranks? What is that going to do that everybody should be wanting?
Yeah. Well, Vermont Works for Women, you could go to their website and see all of the research that has been done, or even any research that has been done on diversity at the top. It improves synergy. It improves retention. It improves recruiting. It improves our effectiveness. So having diversity throughout your organization is a good thing. And so, yes, that doesn't mean that men aren't competent, that men aren't great, but we need diversity to make us greater, to make us more effective. Because again, we are the pool, the labor pool for recruiters to go out there and recruit has always been shrinking. But that's why they need 51% of our population are young women who can do the job of being a warrior, whether in the Air Guard or the Army Guard. And so we want to recruit them. And so we have to create a culture that they want to join, that they feel confident, that they can be safe, and that they can be themselves and not have to simulate to more masculine traits in order to be successful, that they can use the traits that they have been socialized and that they have built up, and be part of a team. And so that's how we're going to build the Vermont National Guard, by, again, all of the things that General Knight's doing, but the scorecard you have to have oversight on the scorecard, because we really work on what we measure and what we see. And self-policing, writing our own report card has not worked in the past. So that's why I feel like a chief diversity officer is an avenue for those warriors to truly put what the culture is like for them and those sort of narratives being reported, and the general, whoever the general is, answering to that report card.
That's Doris Sumner. Doris is former Equal Employment and Diversity Manager for the Vermont National Guard. She's now president of Empowering Gender Opportunities, LLC. Doris, thank you very much for talking with us today. I appreciate your perspective.
Again, I thank you for inviting me.